another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. Today I'm diving into John Paul Jackson and the concept of recycled prophecy, which I think is something that not many historians think through. They will often talk about a person who has claimed a prophecy over a certain aspect of life, whether it's a futuristic prophecy or God speaking directly to an event that's happening currently, and they'll point out all of the details that went wrong with this prophecy, but seldom do people go through and talk systematically of how a prophecy comes to be, is recycled again, reused by another person, claimed by another person. And usually they're in the same theological line of history. John Paul Jackson is one of these figures. His lineage of history can be traced all the way back to some of the research that we've talked about, all the way back to Azusa Street, if you want to go there. And interestingly, that is where I'm going to go today. John Paul Jackson was an author, teacher, conference speaker. He founded the Streams Ministries International. And he is well known for his talks about supernatural, the dreams, the visions, the dream interpretations. And he developed a number of these prophetic training courses on that subject. He hosted the Dreams and Mysteries with John Paul Jackson that was on Daystar, and a recurring guest on many of the different programs that you'll find on TV with all of the televangelists talking about the doom and the gloom and the things to come. And that's where this prophecy that I'm looking at today comes into play. I honestly did not know until I heard it first from, I think it was Brantley Smith, that the Kansas City Prophets believed in a prophecy that I grew up with. And that is a prophecy about the utter destruction of California. And I had studied it to some extent. I knew William Branham made this prophecy in 1965 that Los Angeles would sink beneath the ocean, and there were key details that he got dramatically wrong in the prophecy, and I'll get into that in a little bit, but I had studied the prophecy as it related to William Branham and traced it all the way back to Azusa Street, which I'll talk about that in a minute, but there were other weird things that I found as I began to research this. It wasn't unique to Azusa Street. It wasn't unique to William Branham. There were just a lot of people claiming that Los Angeles is going to be destroyed, and why? So I wanted to know more about that. And then when Brantley mentioned it, I started to dig into the Kansas City Fellowship, the International House of Prayer, and their spin on this so-called prophecy. And what I've come to understand is a lot of these people will reinvent a prophecy and make it sound more appealing, but it's just taking the taking the existing prophecy and putting a twist on it so that it's more appealing to the itching ears. And it appears that John Paul Jackson is one who did this kind of thing. I have investigated John Paul Jackson for another reason. I was looking at Paul Kane and some of the things that were said with regards to the stock markets. And I think John Paul Jackson is most notoriously known for his failed prediction of the stock market, which that's another podcast for another day. But I was clued into the fact that he was another person who was claiming prophecy on things that either he was not prophesying from God or he was just simply making it up as he went. When I discovered the California prophecy, my opinion leaned more towards the he's making it up as he went kind of thing, because as I'll get into in this podcast, this is something that just keeps, it's a theme that keeps repeating and repeating and repeating. And there's no way that all of these people in these histories are unaware that the previous guy made the same prediction. There's just simply no way. There are too many of them. So I wanted to get into that history a bit, and before I do that, I'll mention that John Paul Jackson was critical in the development of what would eventually become IHOP KC. And because of that, he is critical to what would really become the New Apostolic Reformation as we see it today. He was part of one of the many networks that comprise the NAR, but he was in one of the most important and significant ones. So with that, I'll get into the California Prophecy. One of the shows that hosted John Paul Jackson was the Jim Baker Show. And on this show, John Paul Jackson prophesied of a major storm before a major earthquake in California. And you can read about it. I'll throw the link up onto the screen. But the important takeaways from this are listed. It says, an ominous prophecy about California being fulfilled right in front of our eyes with a question mark, which I want to talk about that in a minute. Over the past couple of weeks, a parade of cyclones have been absolutely hammering the state. And then at the bottom of it, it says, the following is a rough transcript of John Paul Jackson's remarks, quote, there is an earthquake that has been predicted to devastate California, meaning that skyscrapers are going to fall, that the shape of the United States will change after the earthquake. That won't happen until after there's a storm. A major storm is coming to California. It's either a hurricane or incredible force, or it is a storm of incredible force. But a great, great hurricane or an incredible force is going to come into California, and the earthquake that destroys it will not happen until after that takes place. As I mentioned, I first heard about the New Apostolic Reformation's version of this through Brantley, but interestingly, I'm pretty sure he wasn't talking about John Paul Jackson, but instead about a prophecy given by Bob Jones. Bob Jones also had a similar prophecy, apparently. Bob Jones is just one of many in the prophetic movement who have failed prophecies, and he's one of the California doomsday predictors. And there are quite a few of them if you go through this, not only in the Pentecostal charismatic movement, but also outside of the movement. And I think there are some reasons why, but we'll get into that in just a little bit. But it is such a widespread problem, this idea that these ministers can prophesy over things that did not come to pass, and then the following will continue to believe they are a prophet, which defies many Bible verses. You cannot be a prophet of God and have failed prophecy, because the way the Bible describes prophecy, the person who is speaking the prophecy is being used as just simply a mouthpiece by God. And so you'll find articles like, there's a section here, and I'll throw this one on the screen as well, How Do Charismatics Rationalize Fallible Prophecy? And it goes, in this article, it goes through all of the different reasons why people should just run screaming from these false prophets. But in this, it starts talking about the major earthquake that was going to devastate the East Coast before the year 2000. It says, in the 1990s, Kansas City prophets Bob Jones and Rick Joyner, similarly, predicted that California would soon be swallowed by the Pacific Ocean after a major earthquake. More recently, Pat Robertson predicted that the United States would experience a horrific terror attack in the second half of 2007. And what this article is trying to say in no uncertain terms is that many of these charismatic leaders who are claiming to be prophets or part of the prophetic movement all have these prophecies about some utter destruction that is about to happen, and then it doesn't happen. And after it doesn't happen, there are people who believe them so much that regardless of whether their prophecy came true or not, they will still continue to believe that this person is a prophet. I'm a true example of this. I was in a movement by a leader who was dead and gone for prophecies that some of them had to include his being alive whenever it was fulfilled, and yet I still believed it was a prophet because I was trained and manipulated to do so. From birth, I was trained like this. After I left, I realized, well, wait a minute. If the guy's dead and he was supposed to be alive whenever the prophecies happen, he either has to rise from the grave, which, interestingly, some of the people, including me, believed, or something else is wrong. And I just never really clued in on the fact that, wait, something else was wrong. Now that I can critically think and I look at this movement, this is a widespread problem. People do not critically think about the prophets because they have been trained that you cannot question the prophets, regardless of whether the Bible says to question the prophets. They will say, "Touch not God's anointed." And when they say this, they mean, if you question my failed prophecy, I'm going to come down upon you with the wrath of God. That's literally what they're saying. But then the prophecy is also the wrath of God. So either way that you take the prophecy or the prophet, you're going to get wrath in this movement. And this is a key characteristic of not just the charismatic movement, but as I've mentioned in the podcasts that I have done about Azusa Street, this goes all the way back to 1906. When the Azusa Street revival began, there were similar things happening. In fact, one of the things happening was this destruction that was coming to the east, to the West Coast. Now, for the Azusa Street revival, as I mentioned in that podcast, it came on the heels of the great earthquake of San Francisco. So the people really did fear that something bad was about to happen. And they were seeing the biblical wars and rumors of wars. They were right on the cusp of what would become World War I. And they saw this great destruction in San Francisco during the height of the Azusa Street revival, and it just broke out into spiritual fervor. One of the reasons why is because everybody was fearing suddenly the end is coming, and their prophecies started matching that theme. And you can imagine the fear that it would have caused at the Azusa Street revival, having just witnessed the San Francisco earthquake and the burning and destruction of San Francisco, but also all of the many aftershocks that were coming. This was a massive, massive earthquake. The Richter scale had not yet been conceived, but the belief is that it was about a 7.9, possibly 8.3 on the Richter scale. And there were approximately between 227,000 and 300,000 people that were left homeless out of a population of only 410,000. Most of those were evacuated. The death toll was approximately, the range is between 700 and 3,000 people, because some of the people who lived in Chinatown apparently weren't counted. But this was a massive, massive earthquake. And the aftershocks continued not just at the San Andreas Fault, but it cascaded to other faults such as the Hayward Fault. And aftershocks were felt until October 28, I believe, is the last one that they felt. So from the Azusa Street revival all the way to October, they're feeling all of these aftershocks. While there's fear and there's revival, and the mixture of fear and revival is a deadly cocktail for destruction. That's why it led to prophecies of destruction. Newspaper reporters who were at the Azusa Street revival in September, while these aftershocks and tremors were still occurring, said that weird prophecies concerning the destruction of Los Angeles were shouted by several of the ranters, and dire calamity was foretold by the fanatics who professed only to see destruction for this city for many days. So, as you can see from even the accounts within the Azusa Street revival, destruction was a theme that was beginning, and it was destruction that was happening on the West Coast. This is nothing new. Whenever you hear John Paul Jackson or Bob Jones or any of these people talking about this, they're talking about something that was predicted long ago. It's just a recurring prediction that continues to fail. The interesting part, if you look at the interview with John Paul Jackson, is that every time there is a major storm, earthquake, or something that can spark the fear and excite the people, they will always go back to this California prophecy. Honestly, whenever Brantley mentioned it to me, that's exactly the thought that went through my head. I grew up living in fear of every single geological event that happened to California. In fact, I can remember several sermons where I would be sitting in the pews and the minister would raise up a newspaper from behind the pulpit and say, "Look, see, California just had this storm or this earthquake or the hurricane, whatever it is that it had." They would hold it up and they would scare us to death that America was fixing to engage in this geological warfare with God. And it's all because of this recurring theme basically this rebranding of prophecy that continues all the way from Azusa Street until today. But as it relates to John Paul Jackson, the question that I would ask is it really prophecy? Where did this come from? Was it from God? If it is false prophecy, which God did it come from? But the question that I'm going to simply ask is, was it prophecy at all? One of the problems that we have whenever we start to investigate one of the so-called prophets in either the Pentecostal movement, the Latter Rain, the Charismatic movement, New Apostolic Reformation, if that person is dead, you'll find people in the comment feeds who will say, why are you asking this now after this person is dead? Why did nobody ask this person when they were alive? But the interesting fact is that many people did, not just with John Paul Jackson, but with many of the others that we've examined who've been branded as false prophets. In fact, in 1990, John Paul Jackson was accused of multiple false prophecies, and it was written down in a widely distributed 233-page paper that was entitled Documentation of the Aberrant Practices and Teachings of Kansas City Fellowship, published by Reverend Ernie Gruen. And during this investigation that was published by Gruen, it was determined that Mike Bickle, the head of the Kansas City Fellowship and later International House of Prayer, Mike Bickle had apparently determined that John Paul Jackson's false prophecies were so bad that he was eventually transferred to Anaheim for a, quote, period of instruction, which meant basically the people are starting to recognize that these prophecies aren't true. We don't want you in this part of this movement. But yet, John Paul Jackson was a key part of the so-called prophetic history. In 1990, there were a few false prophecies, and in fact, there were multiple, according to Ernie Gruen. The biggest one, as I mentioned, was the 1987 prophecy that there's going to be an immediate fall of the stock market. And he gave the date, if I remember correctly, 1988 would be the most severe year for the stock market. So when John Paul Jackson predicted this, and the stock market did not come to a utter collapse, then people began to realize there's something wrong with his prophecies. Either A, they're not from God, B, he's making it up, or C, it came from a different God altogether, because the God of the Bible, according to the Bible, can't have false details in the prophecies. But as it relates to the California prophecies and predictions, John Paul Jackson turned this into an entire marketing scheme. He was branding, or I should say rebranding, the California prophecy as the, quote, coming perfect storm. And Jackson declared as a revelation from God, which he released in a statement in 2008 called The Coming Perfect Storm. And in the statement, he spoke of the time coming to America and in the world which economic, military, religious, political, and geophysical issues and events would occur. And this was in supposed to be in a relatively small time period. So in other words, we have an imminent destruction that is coming. And it came, again, after the failed prediction of the stock market. So this was, from all appearances, this was an attempt to basically rebrand the failed prediction into a broader scheme of predictions. And that branding was the, you know, the coming of the perfect storm. So in the summer of 2009, Jackson went viral with all of this information, as viral as you could in 2009. He was a guest on Sid Roth's It's Supernatural radio and television show, which that was broadcast on the Trinity Broadcasting Network, the Inspiration Network, God TV, Daystar, and other stations. And Jackson went into detail describing the events that were related to this coming destruction. And in those statements, he put a date on it. He said, I saw the year 2010 was going to be really difficult, especially when you get further into 2010. And he said, I kept hearing an angel saying in a deep, loud voice, the woes of 2012, the woes of 2012, the woes of 2012. And he went on Sid Roth's show, he said, I don't know what those woes are, Sid, but the angel did not tell me about those woes, but there was more emphasis on those woes than anything else that was given. And if you'll remember, the year 2012 was significant all across the globe because people were looking to the Mayan calendar. December 21st, 2012 marked the completion of the 13th Baktun, which is a 394-year circle in the long count calendar of the Mayan calendar. And Mayan scholars viewed this as a transition to a new cycle, but there were many people around the globe, not just in the Christian or pseudo-Christian communities, but we're declaring that because the Mayan calendar has a reset, this must be the end of days. And so end of days surrounding 2012 was a very popular theme. So if you consider the Pentecostal history and its relationship to the destruction of California and the hype around the 2012 Mayan calendar event, it appears that John Paul Jackson was actually borrowing from multiple sources when he started doing these predictions, which is fascinating if you think about the implications of that. Now, we can't go back and ask John Paul Jackson how he got these ideas, where they came from, would he be truthful if we even asked him, but you can make some assumptions based off of the fact that this is a repeating and recurring theme over and over and over, not just with John Paul Jackson, but with many of the different characters involved with this. But as it relates to the perfect storm, as he had branded it, he developed this entire resource kit to assist with preparing for this. So it turned into a good way to make money. He separated the perfect storm into five different elements, and he started referencing spiritual and practical materials that you can do to be prepared. And basically, he became a self-made portal to news articles that supported his prophecies that were, again, first spoken in 2008, but was going to have a 2010 to 2012 timestamp. Now, the point I want to make regarding all of this, whether you're looking at the Pentecostals' doomsday destruction that was imminent in 1906, or whether it's John Paul Jackson's imminent destruction in the year 2010 to 2012, is the impact that it has on the mindset of the people. I've mentioned this on the podcast a few times, but I took a business trip while I was in the cult following William Branham, who had a similar prediction about Los Angeles, and the business trip took me to Los Angeles. So when I step off of the plane, the anxiety was through the roof. My heart stopped. My feet were wobbling as I stepped off and walked onto the down the stairs to get into the airport. I was shaking so heavily that I thought I was going to fall down and people were going to have to pick me back up. And that's just the fear of being in California. People asked me whenever I first mentioned that scene in my life, they said, well, what does it matter? What does it matter if you believe that California is going to sink under the ocean? Because according to that mindset, it is. We don't know when it's going to happen. It might happen. It might happen soon. Every single prophet has declared it will happen soon. So therefore, it must happen soon. What does it matter if you believe it anyway? Well, think of the people whose lives are destroyed because of it. I also know families who were in California who had established themselves well, had a good family business going, were living really good in terms of their financial well-being, who came across this California doomsday destruction, and in one case, an entire church transplanted into Louisiana to get away from this imminent destruction. And those families that were transplanted pretty much lost everything. They had to start over from scratch. The point I'm trying to make is that whenever a so-called prophet continues to have false predictions about destruction, and they continue to repeat them, it has a very negative impact on the lives of different people, right down to the children in the movement. Picture the children who are hearing all of these fears of destruction and coming dread and gloom and doom. These are the types of people who grow up with psychological issues because they have no security whatsoever. And these false prophets are bringing this insecurity to the minds of the children. It's such a destructive theology that even the adults, as I've mentioned, will transplant themselves just to get away from this. And all for nothing whenever you realize that this is a prophecy that just keeps repeating over and over and over again. California is going to be destroyed. Whenever it doesn't happen, the next guy carries the torch. California is going to be destroyed. And in the end, you've got multiple lifespans of people who could have lived happy, healthy lives. So when people ask me, why does this matter? Whenever somebody's making these predictions, what does it hurt if it's not imminent? I always go back to the fact that whenever you're destroying the current lives and you've got this history of repeating false prophecies and false predictions about destruction, you're actually doing more harm to the mental stability of the people than the destruction itself.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
I mentioned earlier that John Paul Jackson and the Pentecostal prophets of Azusa Street and the Latter Rain prophets, who are all predicting this destruction of California, are not the only ones predicting the destruction of California. And some of those sources come from outside of the religious realm. One of the most interesting of those is Joe Brandt. Joe Brandt was a 17-year-old who had been riding on a horse and fell and got a concussion. And while he was suffering from a brain injury in a Fresno hospital, he started having these weird hallucinations and predictions of a very grim future for Los Angeles and parts of California. And he started claiming that there was this shift in changes in the earth that would cause parts of Los Angeles and California to just sink into the ocean. And that text, that prophecy, became somewhat famous in the cult following of William Branham because it was published the year after William Branham made his Doomsday for Los Angeles prediction. In fact, Perry Green from the Tucson Tabernacle in Tucson, Arizona, affiliated with the message following of William Branham, he took Joe Brandt's prophecy and claimed that it was an external source supporting William Branham's own prophecy. And he published and reprinted, which I'll throw this on the screen, you can read through it, but it is the text of the prophecy as given by Joe Brandt. In the preface of his republication of Joe Brandt's prophecy, he said, "For a number of years, the Lord has laid it on our heart, the warnings to be sent out concerning the coming earthquake catastrophe in California. It has not been a popular message, nor one that is easy to publish. Confirmations have been received from over the whole earth. We feel that this one, about to be read, could be the last one that we will print. It is taken from Prophecies of Tomorrow, copyrighted by Jessica Madigan." Now, the prophecy of Joe Brandt was initially given in 1937, according to Jessica Madigan. Joe Brandt's prophecy was never initially published whenever it was apparently given in 1937, but instead spread from word of mouth, and he eventually wrote it down. And he apparently handed the papers that he had written to Jessica Madigan in 1965, which she published in her 1966 book, The Prophecies of Tomorrow. If you follow the message cult following of William Branham, the history, the dates seem a little bit suspect. And the fact that you can almost only find these prophecies given on a message-related website, such as Perry Green's, it's even more suspect. But 1965, William Branham has the prophecy. 1965,
Joe Brandt hands these papers, which had never been published, to Jessica Madigan. And she published it in 1966 after William Branham died. Message leaders started using this as confirmation of William Branham's prophecy, and then it kind of died out. There were people, as I mentioned, who transplanted their entire churches out of California, but over time, it began to fade away until William Branham's most famous doomsday prediction of 1977. The prophecy from Joe Brandt was again published in Paul James's California Superquake, 1975 to 1977, and then it was circulated again in prophetic magazines, pamphlets, etc., usually distributed with the intent for end-of-days revival or spreading through end-of-days revival networks. And if you read through the text of what Joe Brandt apparently or allegedly wrote, it sounds eerily similar to what you would hear if you were in a Branham memorial service. In fact, he writes, at the very beginning, he says, in the day of the earthquake, he said, I woke up in the hospital with a terrific headache as if the whole world was revolving inside my brain. I remember vaguely the fall from my horse, Blackie. As I lay there, the pictures began to form in my mind. Pictures that move with the speed of lightning, pictures that stood still. I seemed to be in another world. Whether it was the future or whether it was some ancient land, I could not say. Then so slowly, like the silver screen of the talkies, but with the color and smell and sound, I seemed to find myself in Los Angeles. It was Los Angeles. It was bigger, much bigger, and buses and odd-shaped cars crowded the city streets. When I read this, the odd-shaped cars is what tipped me off that this might not be real. This might be somebody who is supportive of William Branham's ministry, who just happened to hand it in 1965, whenever William Branham made the prediction, as a supportive text for Branham's prophetic doomsday vision. Because in William Branham's version of doomsday, there was going to be this earthquake, there was going to be the catastrophic sinking of California, but he also had plagiarized a few prophecies about the different shape of cars that would happen right before the end of day's destruction. We've talked about that in our Weaponized Religion series and in our Revival History series, but William Branham was apparently getting information from different scientific magazines and from the World's Fair about the evolution of the automobile as it related to aerodynamics. And after seeing this egg-shaped car in the 1933 World's Fair, after seeing it, Branham started claiming that he predicted in 1933 that cars would be shaped like an egg, which is not that much of a prediction if you saw the car that was supposed to be shaped like an egg. Interestingly, they have proven this did not work. Even the car that was at the 1933 World's Fair, because the egg is so top-heavy, it flipped over and burned. And this idea never really caught on. So Branham's egg-shaped car prophecy transformed into something entirely different later. But as it relates to Joe Brandt and the message movement in general, they still believe the egg-shaped car prophecy in that version and still continue to look for a car to be shaped like an egg, even though it doesn't work. It has been proven that it doesn't work. So the fact that it's mentioned in Joe Brandt's prophecy, that's a little bit suspect. But then later, this prophecy was republished in Paul James' California Superquake, 1975 to 1977, which also raises the suspicions, because William Branham's most famous doomsday prediction out of the several doomsday dates that he had given was 1977. And there were many people who were in the Branham movement that believed 1977 was the end of the world, we must sell all that we have because we're going up into the rapture, and people did this. A lot of them actually gave all of their possessions to whatever minister or evangelist they were following, which turned into a disaster for them and very good for the minister who received everything that they had. But the fact that this was circulated in 1977 raises even more suspicion. So I look at this prophecy as not really a good external source because it might be something that was put out as propaganda. But Joe Brandt is not the only one who had this type of prediction. And the other source that I'll go to, and there are various sources that have this type of prediction for California, but the biggest one of all, I think, is the prediction that was made by Edgar Cayce. Cayce was an American clairvoyant who reportedly had the ability to diagnose diseases and recommend treatments for different ailments while being asleep. And during thousands of transcribed sessions, Cayce answered questions on everything from healing to reincarnation, dreams, the afterlife, past lives, nutrition, Atlantis, and future events. He basically was of the early 1900s and late 1800s. He was the John Paul Jackson of the clairvoyant scene. One of the things that Cayce predicted was the destruction and the reshaping of the North American continent. Where it gets really interesting as it relates to William Branham and Branham's version of the California destruction, Cayce was born in Kentucky, the same state that William Branham was born, in Christian County, Kentucky, to be specific, but later moved to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and eventually he moved to Louisville, Kentucky. So right across the river from William Branham's Branham Tabernacle was Edward Cayce in Louisville, Kentucky. And though he would later move to Bowling Green, he attended business college in Kentucky, so whenever Cayce became widely known throughout the United States, people in Kentucky and the southern Indiana area could claim some of his fame. So William Branham grew up in an era whenever Edward Cayce would have been known in Kentucky, southern Indiana. And Edward Cayce, as I mentioned, was one who predicted the destruction of California. In fact, and if you're watching the YouTube version of this, I'll put it up on the screen, but Cayce described the map of the United States, what it would look like after the coming destruction. And his map is eerily similar to what was described by William Branham in the Latter Rain Revivals. Cayce and other doomsday prophet enthusiasts have created this map called the Future Map of North America. And as you can see from the map, there's a large section of Los Angeles and parts of California that are now under the ocean in this futuristic map. Also interesting is the spreading of the Mississippi River into this wide swath of land that has been just inundated by the flood that came in from the Gulf, which is another part of William Branham's weird doomsday predictions. So there's evidence that William Branham got some of his doomsday predictions from Edward Cayce. However, Branham did not immediately run with this idea, Cayce having this prediction back in the late 1930s and Branham having his in 1965. It wasn't until William Branham was watching a television program that was discussing the instability of Los Angeles until Branham decided he would go public with this, his version of the California sinking prophecy. In the program, Branham mentions that a scientist was interviewed that stated that Los Angeles would sink within 5 years. So in true doomsday prophet form, William Branham, having been to Los Angeles and not had the huge impact that he thought he was going to have, he started condemning the entire city. This is the city that held the Azusa Street Revival. Now Pentecostalism was fading, and his message was not well received. I'll just put it like that. He declared this. He said, "That is solemn warning. We don't know what time, and you don't know what time, that this city one day is going to be laying out here in the bottom of the ocean. O Capernaum, said Jesus, thou who exalted into heaven will be brought down into hell. For if the mighty works had been done in Sodom and Gomorrah, it had been standing to this day, and Sodom and Gomorrah lays at the bottom of the Dead Sea, and Capernaum is in the bottom of the sea. Thou city who claims to be the city of angels, who has exalted yourself into heaven and sent all the dirty, filthy things and fashion and things, till even some of the foreign countries come here to pick up our filth and send it away to your fine churches and steeples and so forth, the way that you do. Remember, one day you'll be laying at the bottom of the sea, your great honeycomb under you right now." So a couple things. This is Branham claiming that God is speaking through him at that moment and claiming that Jesus is saying these things about Los Angeles, how you'll be under the ocean, just as Capernaum is under the sea. There's a couple problems here. Number one, he does mention the honeycomb under it. So he is referring to the television program that he's just watched, where the broadcaster is saying that they have 5 years left. And that was in 1965, so that would put the destruction of Los Angeles at 1970. So in 1965, William Branham is predicting that by 1970, according to the newspaper accounts or the new television reports, Los Angeles is going to be sunk under the ocean. And at minimum by 1977, because that was the ultimatum of his doomsday prediction. But the other thing to mention, which was a kind of a shock to me, I grew up hearing this prophecy over and over and over, believing that Los Angeles was going to sink, fearing for my life when I was out there. When God spoke through him and said that Capernaum was under the sea, God was apparently lying through William Branham. And that was really hard for me to deal with whenever I found out, because I believed it. I believed it hook, line, and sinker. But I was watching a National Geographic program one day, and they were walking through different areas in the Middle East. One of the places that they went was Capernaum, and they were showing the digs that they had, finding all of the different pottery, etc. And they were talking about how the city had been through multiple iterations, where the city was destroyed and then was built on top of the destruction, then that was destroyed, and they could show the evidence of each layer of city, none of which included being under the sea. Capernaum has never been under the sea. There is no record of this. So this God that was allegedly speaking through William Branham was speaking untruths. And how do I reconcile this? So part of my waking up is to critically think about every detail. Whenever somebody says, I am prophesying to you, are all the details correct? Because if God is speaking through their mouth, every single detail must be correct, or otherwise it's not God. At minimum, it's a false God. And you don't want to follow prophecies by a false God, especially whenever they're doomsday predictions that can destroy lives. So I grew up listening to this, hearing all of this doomsday rhetoric, and then come to find out he got it from a television station and could not even get the details correct of what God is saying through him when he apparently made this up. The other thing that I'll mention, William Branham's eldest son went on tour with this doomsday prediction. And I remember going to multiple meetings, listening to him talk about his father's prediction of Los Angeles. And he would get real quiet whenever he started to tell it, and talk about the things that William Branham told him in private about this conversation. And he would say things like, whenever we were walking through Los Angeles downtown, he said, Daddy looked at me and he said, Billy Paul, you won't be an old man until sharks are swimming right here where you're standing. And that is another prediction that got published by Perry Green, who published the Joe Brandt prophecy. But I heard it over and over and over from Branham's own son, from other leaders in the message, including my grandfather, who was the head pastor at Branham's Branham Tabernacle for 50 years. Over and over, we would hear that before Billy Paul was an old man, California, Los Angeles was going to sink under the ocean. And there would be sharks swimming specifically at the May Company. I visited the May Company when I was in California the last time, and I stood where sharks are supposed to be swimming. William Branham's son, who was supposed to have been a young man whenever California sank, is now dead. He's no longer alive. And one day back in 2000, I think it was 13 or 14, I mapped out the life expectancy of what was considered to be an old man in 1965. The life expectancy for the male half of the population was 72.2 years approximately in the year 1965, which places Billy Paul Branham's old man status at the year 2008. Now, he did live longer than this. He continued to tell this prophecy after reaching old man status, but eventually he died, and California still has not fallen under the ocean. What this tells me is two things. Number one, this prophecy could not have come from God. God would have known that Capernaum has never been under the ocean, and God have would have surely been able to foresee that William Branham's son would live past the old man status. So for me, the prophecy sits off into the false prophecy category. But the bigger thing that it tells me, there are people still today that believe this prophecy to be true, even though the son is dead, even though Capernaum has never been under the sea. They are aware of these critical facts, but because of the manipulation by the cult mindset, they will still believe it until their death. And so they will go to their graves believing that California is truly going to sink because this man in Kentucky, who apparently got some information from Edward Casey and others, predicted that Los Angeles would sink. They will believe it till their dying day. It tells me that there is a deep level of cognitive dissonance within the movement, and you can see the pattern of this as it continues through time. Again, this began with the Azusa Street Revival. I believe, if I remember correctly, I came across similar predictions before this, but definitely the Azusa Street Revival. It continued through time, through various sources, some religious, some not, all the way up to 1965. People were predicting this. Now, fast forward, you have people who are devoted to William Branham who are still predicting it as though it's fresh new prophecy. John Paul Jackson is not the only one who did this. Whenever I heard Brantley tell me that the same exact prophecy came from Bob Jones of the Kansas City Fellowship, IHOP KC Prophetic History, I began to realize that IHOP KC was basically Branhamism 2.0. Many of the same things that they were taught to fear, believe, and understand about the Bible and the end of days prophecies, many of those things were copied and lifted directly from William Branham. Some of them did change, such as the rapture theology, etc. But the core foundation, much of it was exactly the same. And interestingly, Bob Jones is one who proclaimed that the angel of God that William Branham had in his latter rain ministry was also coming down into the ministries of himself and Todd Bentley, others, and the angel was named Emma. So he basically took the angel theme that Branham had reinvented. He took the prophetic visions of the doomsday that is going to include Los Angeles. He took those and rebranded them. This new branding became part of the DNA for what would become the International House of Prayer in Kansas City, and eventually the DNA that would be spread throughout the revival movement. You can listen to people like Bill Johnson talking about how Branham is such a God's general that people like Chris Vallotton are trying to get Branham's alleged mantle or commission or whatever is the thing that Chris Vallotton is trying to get. They're trying to basically recreate ministries. So this evolution of ministries from Pentecostal through Charismania through the New Apostolic Reformation, it's not really something new they're selling you. They're just taking something that is old, something that failed, and they're trying to rebrand it as something new, continuing to believe that if they can rebrand it as something new, maybe it won't fail this time. And the definition of insanity, if you keep trying the same thing over and over and over again with the same result, it's probably insanity. And I have to look at just this one Los Angeles prophecy alone. The fact that it continues through time and people keep saying the same exact things, it, for me, it is insanity. Even if it's going to happen in the future, if you're losing, if you're destroying lives to predict it in today, knowing that you got it wrong the time before that, all the way back for decades of time, you have gotten it incorrect, it really doesn't do any good to keep saying the same thing over and over and over again. But most interesting of all is the fact that some of these people know that what they're saying is not going to happen. And people like Rick Joyner, they start giving prophetic words in the opposite direction. They take advantage of the fact that the prophecy continues to fail and give prophetic words that they can, quote, delay judgment in Los Angeles. So I'll throw the article up on the screen, but you've got Lou Engel and Rick Joyner, who are talking about the same predictions, but saying that we're going to delay this just a bit. So everybody who believes the prophecy and then is expecting it to happen, it doesn't happen. Well, It's just delayed. We're not seeing the thing happen. But I can guarantee you, the next person who comes along who sells this idea, they're going to get book sales, conventions. They're probably going to have interviews on national television, radio. They're going to gain quite a following until it fails. And then some other guy steps up and said, well, we're going to delay it just a bit more. It's going to continue time and time and time again. That was the life that I grew up in. I believed that California was going to sink, and every single natural occurrence, whether it was a tornado, a hurricane, earthquake, we used to keep, this is sad, I'm admitting something I probably shouldn't, we used to keep the geological stats on earthquakes up on our screens. I did this when I was at work in IT because we could watch whenever there was a big concentration of earthquakes, the big one is coming. California is about to sink. We're about to witness the destruction. And the really sad part about this is, if you're a Christian and you're in this mindset, your focus is on doom. Your focus is not on the gospel. So you're constantly thinking of the destruction and what's going to play out. And there's this element of fear. Well, what happens when the destruction occurs? Will I be lifted up? Will I be going in, up into a rapture? Will I be here? How hard is life going to be when it's here? And I'm here to tell you, life is hard enough as it is. Without all of this doomsday rhetoric that's being pushed by this movement, life is hard enough. You don't really need that in your life. In fact, it will make you go crazy. It almost did me, and there are other people that I know of who actually, they are having to deal with some severe stress and trauma because of the doomsday rhetoric that was in their lives. So my advice is, eliminate all of this thought of doomsday rhetoric, all of these predictions that they keep making the same prediction over and over and it continues to fail. In the end, what does any of that really matter? And if you're a Christian, it shouldn't matter at all because you're supposed to feel safety and security and the gospel should be enough for you. The problem is, as the Apostle Paul wrote, people have itching ears and they want something that's just a little bit more entertaining. And for me, that's what this California prophecy is. It's nothing more than entertainment. It's really a bad form of entertainment. It's not what I would choose to be entertained by. But unfortunately, I was for 37 years of my life. So hopefully you can flee this, you can run from it screaming, you don't have to put up with it anymore, because this is not something that Christians should have to deal with. If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion from Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.